Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we meet the incoming executive director of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. Keith Elder will officially become executive director in August of this year for the collaborative musician-run orchestra. He comes to Tulsa from the Aspen Music Festival and School, where he was vice president and general manager. And apparently, the uniqueness of the Tulsa Symphony, where musicians are involved in collective governance and consensus decision-making, was an attraction for this former musician himself and arts administrator. Elder was the chief operational officer for the Aspen Festival, and during his 20-year career, he has served as director of concert activities at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester, New York, the vice president of operations for the Detroit Symphony, and held a variety of positions with the Boston Symphony, Boston Pops, and Tanglewood Music Center. I spoke with him as he was meeting with symphony stakeholders back in April, prior to the orchestra's final classics concert of the season. When I spoke with him, the Chicago Symphony had just gone out on strike, which he alludes to early in our conversation. That strike was resolved on April 27th. Keith Elder, the incoming executive director of the Tulsa Symphony, speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. Keith Elder, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me here.
You're the general manager of the Aspen Music Festival, one of the most prestigious summer festivals in the world. Yet you have come to Tulsa to run the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, be the new executive director. What attracted you to this position?
Well, I mean, it's an exciting time for Tulsa. It's an exciting time for this orchestra. This orchestra has a very unique model, which is a very collaborative model with musicians. Works with a formal consensus model. And it's a model that I personally believe is transformational for orchestras around the country. Because, you know, an example being what's happening right now with the Chicago Symphony. The Chicago Symphony is out on strike. Management and the orchestra is not really talking. You know, and this model is set up so that the musicians, management, they're working together. They're all in it together. They know what's going on together. And they're following a unified vision together. And that's really important for a successful organization, whether it's music or any other business. That's incredibly important. And from my background, I'm a tuba player. I'm a musician, you know, and I really respect the quality and the excellence of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. And I'm really excited to be here in August. I will miss Aspen, but this is a time for this orchestra. You know, Ron Preddle, who is the executive director now, has set an amazing foundation for this orchestra.
Yeah. So I assume you're in place to maybe take this orchestra to the next level. And, of course, the predecessor orchestra, the Tulsa Philharmonic, was a much larger organization. Mm-hmm. It was at a regional orchestra level, although I would say the artistic quality is not that much different today.
Right.
But certainly it was a much larger budget at the time. Do you anticipate getting back to that element, or do you see a different way of going forward with this musician-led model?
So I think there is a different way of going forward. And when you talk about the next level, what I look at is that we're not looking at going to the next level. We're looking at telling the story. We're looking at the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra being part of the city of Tulsa community. We're looking at this orchestra continuing the artistic excellence that it already currently has and really telling that story to the entire Northeast Oklahoma area. You know, the orchestra, I do see it growing and expanding and, you know, really continuing to attract top-notch musicians here and being a center point for this city. And, you know, as the arts, and I think Tulsa, that's one of the things that attracted me to Tulsa is Tulsa has an amazing arts community. The arts, they're an economic driver. And I think that the Tulsa Symphony, along with all the other arts organizations, can be leaders in being a driver within this community.
Yeah. It's a very different model talking to you as executive director of the Tulsa Symphony, which again is this orchestra collaborative model, and talking to a new executive director, usually a new CEO or head of a arts group, has a absolute focus of things they want to change, and it's probably something they've talked with the board of directors and so there's a new vision of where you want to go. But everything you do as executive director has to go through this whole collaborative model and get complete buy-in from the orchestra. What are some of the things they've told you? Because I'm assuming you've had a lot of conversations with the musicians already. What are some of the things they want to accomplish?
They want to continue the artistic excellence. They want to continue music, and they want to continue sharing that product with the area. And so we're going to continue to do that, and we're going to continue to make sure artistic excellence is at the forefront and really working within the different committees and making sure programming fits in with and checks all the boxes that are necessary. We're pretty excited that next season is out, and it looks like a great season that checks many boxes. From that standpoint, and it's also really developing the season. So, we added a concert for next season. Mm-hmm. Do I see more concerts being added? Potential. Do I see more of a footprint around the Oklahoma area? Absolutely. And really using this orchestra as a leader to get the city of Tulsa's name out there and equating it with excellence and quality.
As you well know, symphony orchestras have had to sort of change their vision over the last 20 years. I'm sure you've been involved with some of those in the past. Can you maybe talk about something in your past that where you've really changed the focus of the orchestra or added to the focus of the orchestra so to make it much more inclusive to a larger community beyond the typical audience that would go to a classical music concert?
Sure. I mean, the best example I can give there is I was oversaw the concert series at the Eastman School of Music, mm-hmm. and it was a series that appealed to everybody. It had Broadway, it had orchestra, it had Norah Jones on there, it had jazz, and so it had a little something for everybody. And I've taught quality during our time together, and that's what was important there as well, so that when people would go to see a performance, whether it was jazz, classical, or world music, they enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. It was music touches. It touched people. And so that was something that was changed there that went, and all of a sudden it became the series in town that people wanted to see and be part of. I mean, we sold that first season, had everything from Jason Alexander to Bela Fleck, St. Petersburg Philharmonic. It had a wide variety, and we sold out many shows mm-hmm. with that series. And, and looking and working with the musicians here, really looking at the mix from an artistic standpoint is going to be important. They've done next season it's amazing. It's fabulous. They do a fabulous job. And as we're looking at the different components, you're going to see some exciting things to come.
As you well know, a lot of orchestras have taken their role in the community to a different place in the last couple of decades. I think the symphony has been very involved mm-hmm. in a lot of ways in which don't make headlines. I think, Correct. Is that perhaps one of your jobs is to focus? They're participating in a lot of schools. Mm-hmm. They're doing a lot of pop-up sort of mm-hmm. things, but you don't hear a lot of publicity right. about it. Is that a right. big mission point for you?
Yeah, no, that's important. It's telling the story. The musicians have great quality. Our Link Up program, which is a program that was founded at Carnegie Hall, we're the biggest in the country. We serve more children through that education program than any other Link Up program. Wow. And that is a program of getting this orchestra to that next generation and servicing this community. And this community, music is vital to.
You might want to talk a little bit about that Link Up program, because I think people may have seen a short clip on television or heard a little clip on the radio, but it's really much more than just kids coming to hear the orchestra. It's a curriculum that goes on through the whole school year, correct?
It's a curriculum that working with the teachers, David Carter, our education, works with the teachers before the school starts, and then the curriculum starts, and then the students are working on their musical aspects, and then the orchestra comes in and plays a concert, and it's sort of all interactive and collaborative. And it looks at this from a music education side that's fun. And so the students are learning in a fun atmosphere, and then they get to hear the orchestra. And so it's incredibly successful. It's expanding. I mean, that's another area that we're looking at really expanding and helping sort of broaden that the reach out beyond the city and into some of the outer areas. And so it's a pretty amazing program. Carnegie Hall puts together the curriculum so that it's at a high level, and then we take it and work with the teachers here.
Yeah, and it's all over north, all over the suburban area,
yeah,
really.
I correct.
Mean, as well as the Tulsa schools as well.
Correct, and it attaches and starts a touch point with that young student that this will follow them for the rest of their lives. And they'll go from this to maybe playing an instrument, to maybe singing in a choir, to going to college and maybe singing in a choir, to or playing in a band. And it's a wonderful introduction and start to music education.
My guest today is Keith Elder. He's the newly named executive director of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. Earlier you were talking about expanding the footprint of mm-hmm. Tulsa Symphony. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? I know some orchestras, it's, you know, the orchestra goes out to churches. It goes into places where perhaps fewer than 1 in 1,000 in the community would actually come mm-hmm. to the Tulsa Performing Arts Center or the Performing Arts Center where the orchestra plays to actually hear them and bring it out to them. What do you mean exactly by that?
Well, expanding the footprint has many meanings. I think the first is getting the orchestra to places that are outside a little bit of the city area, out where people can experience an orchestra that might not have been able to experience an orchestra before. But it's also sending chamber groups out. It's also sending maybe brass groups, wind groups, string groups, so that people in Oklahoma can really see and feel and hear the energy, the quality, and the excellence of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. And that's part of expanding that footprint. But there's also a story to be told nationally, and that's the story of an orchestra that has come back. You know, the 15-year anniversary is coming up of the orchestra, and has come back in a unique way, in a successful way, in a way that is working with musicians as opposed to against musicians. And that's a national story. So that's expanding the orchestra's footprint on a national stage, and really working as a leader nationally on getting this model out there and making sure orchestral and classical music is successful in the United States.
Now, there's certainly examples of successful musician-run orchestras in Europe mm-hmm. with large subsidies from the state. In America, it's a little different. It's mm-hmm. it's harder to do because a lot of the financial support comes from private sources, and generally the most successful examples over time have been these large, you know, board-centered orchestras. Mm-hmm. This musician-run model is a little different. Is Tulsa perhaps the best successful story, or are there other successful stories out there?
I think right now, if you want to talk about successful stories, talk about the Berlin Philharmonic of the Vienna.
Well, yeah, so, no, I know, but
you know, and I will say, you know, being at Aspen, the advantage to being there is that we have faculty with the Aspen Music Festival that are from both of those orchestras, and I've talked to them, you know, about their model and talked to them about how it works. And, you know, an example being, you know, imagine a trombone audition. And with the Berlin Philharmonic, the entire orchestra can sit and listen to the audition. It's yeah. not just a committee. They would have 60 people sitting in the audience as people are playing through their auditions. Same with Vienna. And so in the United States, that's very unusual.
That's incredible, as you well know.
Right. It's very unusual. And so that's why I firmly believe that this model here with this orchestra, that this what it does is it works here in Tulsa. Because the musicians, you know, there's a passion, there's a caring, they want to be successful, and, you know, it works. And do I know of any other place in this country? No. One of the reasons why it really interests me coming here to the Tulsa Symphony is that, you know, in Aspen, it's the same thing. The faculty are very integrated into the management and the structure of what we do. And so I can't just set a vision and say, we're doing this. It's working through consensus. It's working through committees. It's working through. And when you go through that process at the end of the day and as you've gone down that road, the product is better.
Really? So that's in your experience?
My experience. The product is better. People have bought into it. There are ideas that you might not have thought about that all of a sudden has shaped it, and it starts off going in one direction, maybe take a turn to the left and then come back to the center, which creates for a better product for the orchestra. It creates a better orchestra for the community, and it makes for a better classical music and art and arts community.
Now, obviously, it takes a different type of arts administrator to do that, because as you well know, an administrator oftentimes has their own vision, and really you have to throw that vision out and help craft a joint vision.
Correct. But I mean, in crafting that joint vision, I will say all of the musicians that I've worked with over the past 25 years of my career, there are certain common threads. They want to make sure that the quality of what they're doing is top. They want to make sure that the orchestra and colleagues they're working with are people they like to collaborate and work with, that they can share the musical language with, that that you're working and that the everybody's moving in the same direction for advocacy, for, you know, telling the story of the orchestra, for making sure that the center purpose of what that orchestra does is classical music. It's not about X, Y, and Z. It's about the art. And crafting a vision here with this orchestra, that stays at the forefront.
There is one difference between a summer festival where you're working collaboratively and say, a symphony orchestra where it is the primary means of employment, mm-hmm. and that is financial remuneration.
Yeah.
That is a big change, isn't it?
It is
because the Aspen musicians, they have their own orchestras mm-hmm. or their own professorships mm-hmm. they go back to in the fall.
Sure. But, you know, prior to Aspen, I was with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, and prior to the Detroit Symphony, I was with the Boston Symphony, and I was with the Boston Symphony for almost 18 years. And these are orchestras that their main profession is playing in the orchestra as opposed to in Aspen, very similar to here in Tulsa. You know, and that's another thing that's important to the musicians is quality of life, being able to afford to make a living here. You know, this model is unique in the sense that you've got chamber music, you have orchestral. There are different ways of making it all work and looking at the pie and putting the pieces together so that this orchestra works, this orchestra, you know, is successful. And it's my role as the executive director to stand on the rooftops and tell everybody how wonderful these musicians and these donors, these patrons are, and how wonderful they are for the Tulsa community.
But of course, you're talking about expanding their footprint in mm-hmm. the community. That means a bigger size budget for the orchestra down mm-hmm. the road. Do you think you have buy-in from the community to do that?
I think this orchestra does have buy-in from the community. You know, the arts are very important to the community of Tulsa. And, you know, this orchestra is a strong piece of that arts community. And I do believe there's buy-in. I do believe that the community wants this. The community wants to support this. And that this will be something that's going to grow and really develop. Like I said, the orchestra for the past, since it has been started, has built an amazing foundation, and it's now time to build that beautiful house on top of that foundation.
My guest today is Keith Elder. He's the newly named executive director of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra. He comes to Tulsa from the Aspen Music Festival and School, where he was the general manager and vice president of Aspen, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, I assume you had a number of discussions with musicians, all the sort of stakeholders that one would have for an orchestra like this. What was the one thing that's really excited you about this proposition and where the orchestra is now and where you'd like to see it in 5 to 10 years?
Passion. This orchestra has passion. And that's what excited me, is that between board, between, you know, donors, between orchestra musicians, this orchestra has passion. And with passion, you can really go far. You can develop strategy, and you can really put the proper business pieces together that will then move this orchestra.
Passion in what regard? Towards making music itself or a combination of making music and making this organization work better for the city?
So it's a combination. I mean, you know, the musicians, what's unique about these musicians is they do care about the city of Tulsa, and they care about the city of Tulsa.
A lot of these players are survivors from the Philharmonic. Yeah. Some, many of those, their colleagues left the city.
And they haven't.
And they didn't.
And they did not. They're here. And so there's a passion for this city. There's a definite passion for classical music. If you have ever heard the orchestra, which I hope, if you haven't, come out and see a concert, is that there's a passion from the stage. When you talk to donors, there's a passion as a listener, and there's a excitement as a listener. And then the board wants to do the right thing. The board, you know, I've spoken to many boards, and there are boards that look upon musicians not in the best of light. And
this board, as employees?
As employees. Yeah, I would say as employees.
And the people we're having to raise all this money for. Yeah, really,
exactly.
that is a true statement
exactly.
For a lot of places.
And you're right there. But this board here cares about the musicians, and they really care about this orchestra, and they care about this community. And this orchestra, with this passion and this sort of leadership, and when I say leadership, it's not necessarily 100%, it's the leadership of the organization, has the potential of really being an advocate for the city of Tulsa and for the arts community here nationally.
Let me ask you one last question. Mm-hmm. I know you probably have a lot of ideas that you'll have to run through this collaborative model, but when will we see a Keith Elder stamp, or not necessarily a stamp on the orchestra, but a Keith Elder guiding of the orchestra? When do you think we'll see that?
You know, I'll be starting in August. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time coming into this is getting to know the orchestra, getting to know the board, getting to know the patrons. You know, and I would think my stamp and what I hope to bring to this organization is a way of helping people express their vision as well of where this orchestra is going to go and really helping guide that, you know, and in an ideal world, when you say the Keith Elder stamp, there will be a seamless transition, and you'll just see the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra as it's sort of blossoming. The brochure will be mailed, is being mailed out, and if you look at it, it's a beautiful brochure of vibrancy and the blossoming of this orchestra. And so my hope and dream is that you're not going to see the Keith Elder stamp, but you're going to see the Tulsa Symphony stamp as an organization as it's blossoming and growing.
All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Arts Administrator Keith Elder speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. He is the incoming executive director of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, who officially become director in August of this year following the retirement of Ron Prettle. For more information on the Tulsa Symphony and their upcoming season, visit tulsasymphony.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Barry Friedman.
Last June, before Oklahoma's medical marijuana law passed, I was on a conservative talk radio show when a woman called in to say she was against passage because it would open, she said, the floodgates to recreational weed. I remember commenting, my sanctimony primed, that even if she were right, so what? Did four college sophomores at OSU getting high on their front porch of their Stillwater duplex, especially because they probably already were, really derail the importance of a bill that would alleviate the suffering of so many? I feel now as I did then, I think. I'm not a fan of medical marijuana for several reasons, says Dr. John Schumann. The main issue is the lack of proven medical efficacy. I know there are thousands of anecdotes from people whose pain or anorexia has been diminished by marijuana, and I'm genuinely glad for them. But I'd like to see better powered controlled trials of cannabis products head-to-head with accepted therapeutic agents. As mentioned, that's Dr. John Schumann from an article entitled, No, I Won't Prescribe You Pot. You know John here at Public Radio Tulsa. He's also president of the University of Oklahoma Tulsa, and the reason I'm using his first name is because he's my doctor. I trust him with my life. Not that you have to, or even with your cannabis prescription. Not that he'd write you one. But his point about anecdotal evidence deserves attention. A study from the Alberta College of Family Physicians said what little evidence exists is of poor quality and may not even be representative of the purposes for which medical marijuana is sought. If it is to be treated as medicine, then it needs to meet the same standards of quality, effectiveness, and safety we would expect of any other prescription drug. The NIH said the merits of medical marijuana and recreational cannabis policies are not well known. The journal Spectator Health, writing about the benefits of THC, concluded there is absolutely no evidence that cannabis has any curative impact on cancers. All right. There has always been, to my mind, something of a linguistic bait and switch about the term medical marijuana, as if putting medical in front of marijuana gussies up the herb and allows it to sit at the adult table instead of on the laps of those four OSU students on that Stillwater porch trying to get out the seeds. There was and is as well a healthy amount of paranoia that contends Big Pharma is threatened by the grassroots movement of pot, and that is why there is such resistance to medical weed. As if companies like GlaxoSmithKline fear two guys in a head shop stocking up on baggies. State Question 788 is the most liberal medical marijuana bill in the country, allowing Oklahoma physicians who sign up with the state to prescribe it. It's really more of a permission slip to patients who also have to sign up to receive it. Patients can get as much weed as legally possible, legally allowable, even, alas, for those conditions for which pot does nothing. So is it possible that advocates of State Question 788, and I was one of them, were we so anxious for it to pass, so in need of a political win, and so willing to embrace our own preconceived notions of pot that we never stopped to see or care if medical science was along for the ride? Now, I'm aware that by not celebrating the success of this, by even bringing up the research that indicates there might be a problem, puts me, if not in bed with, but certainly in the same room with the likes of former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who once said, good people do not smoke marijuana, which is enough to make me want to pull out my old Cheech and Chong albums. As of April 1st, approximately 150 physicians have registered with the Oklahoma Medical Marijuana Authority to prescribe marijuana for the more than 100,000 Oklahomans who signed up for their medical marijuana licenses, and they're not all suffering from chemotherapy-induced nausea. They want to get high. And that's fine. Let them get high. There are less count. Listen to this. A dispensary for every 12 patients. That's huge business. But it's bad medicine. Pot has always been a political, legal, and social construct. That's a good place for it to stay. Let's leave the doctors out of this. But if you insist on allowing them in, listen to them. Schumann says the bottom line is that inhaling burning plant matter into your lungs is a terrible idea, regardless of the herb. The medical marijuana train has not just left the station, it's pulling into the Continental Divide, and no sane person wants to go back to the fear-mongering days of reefer madness or increase state penalties for those who use pot. So it's good that those who can benefit from weed now can. Let me repeat that. It's long past time that people for whom weed can provide relief can get it. But that's not the same thing as endowing and championing weed with other magical medicinal qualities it hasn't come close to proving it possesses, no matter how good the hype and how hard the political struggle was to get here.
Barry Friedman is a writer and essayist, a columnist for the Tulsa Voice, and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.